Just days before the midterm election, most candidates are trying to get as much exposure as they can. But Joni Ernst is saying no to Iowa's newspapers. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We'll talk with political columnist Kathy Obradovich about why the Senate candidate is saying no to invitations by Iowa newspaper editorial boards. We'll also talk about the contentious debate last night between 4th District Congressman Steve King and Democratic challenger Jim Maurer. Also, Iowa nice guy Scott Sipker announces he's running for governor. We'll hear about our new statewide emergency notification system, and thousands of Iowans celebrate the Hindu New Year. Diwali! Buckle up. Your News Buzz starts after this news from NPR. It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up a little bit later in the hour, a real whodunit. Who stole 18 acres of soybeans? That's right, they were harvested right out of the field. And we'll talk to a farmer who is missing his 18 acres of soybeans. That coming up. But first, last night, before an audience of about 350 people at Buena Vista University, U.S. Representative Steve King and his Democratic challenger Jim Maurer met in their only debate of this campaign season. The race is to represent Iowa's 4th U.S. House District, covers 39 counties in north central and northwest Iowa, Ames, Mason City, Fort Dodge, Sioux City, some of the cities in that 4th District. The one-hour debate was broadcast live by Iowa Public Television. It was moderated by Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa, Kathy Obradovich of the Des Moines Register, and Dean Borg of IPTV and Iowa Public Radio. Dean Borg joins me now. Hi, Dean.
Hi, Ben.
How does it look the day after? How would you characterize the one and only debate between these two?
Well, it was very testy. I think that's the way to put it. It was strained. I think it was very uncomfortable for Congressman King. And at times he expressed that orally. He said something to the effect of, this is getting very tiresome, very tiresome.
Mm-hmm. I know one of the issues that was addressed, and we'll hear a little bit of the audio, a contentious moment. King said he disagreed with President Obama's decision to order American troops to Africa to help fight Ebola, adding they face a silent killer they don't understand. King suggested any U.S. troops sent to Africa should be volunteers. And here's how his opponent, Jim Maurer, responded.
As a soldier, I understand that you volunteer when you raise your right hand and you're willing to sacrifice everything for this country. Soldiers follow orders. This is a job that needs to be done. That's why Congressman King never volunteered for the military.
Would you like to respond, Congressman?
I think that this judgment to do this debate will speak for itself.
Okay, so Dean Borg, was that typical of the entire hour-long debate? So we heard the audience groaning there.
It was, and I didn't quite, as moderator, I didn't quite understand. I gave Congressman King at that point a chance to respond because I thought that he had been hit with an oral jab, and I needed a response from him. And I didn't really think that he responded because I didn't quite know how to interpret what he said. My decision to do this debate speaks for itself.
Yes, perhaps he's referencing the drama leading up to the debate, at least in part. Dean King had said he might not debate after that date was agreed upon, right?
Well, the debate itself, we issued debate invitations to the Congress candidates in all 4 of Iowa's districts. And the only district that we have not had a debate in is the 1st Congressional District, and we won't, because there was no agreement there on a date. The 4th District held out the longest, but then Congressman King called me from Washington, I would say about 4 weeks ago now, if not a little bit longer. And during that conversation, he expressed some of his reservations about considerations, maybe is a better word, about the debate. But then we concluded that conversation with an agreement, him saying to me, Dean, I'm agreeing to do the debate, and we'll do it on October 23rd. And so I then passed that on to the arrangers, the producers at Iowa Public Television, and we went forward with that. I want to also say that in all of the intervening time, yes, we heard Congressman King had made statements to the effect of unless a certain commercial being aired by Jim Maurer is pulled from the air, I may not go ahead with the debate.
Right.
He never said anything to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went forward as though there were going to be a debate because that's the word he had given to me. Right. And I would say it's earlier this week. I can't pinpoint the exact day. Congressman King called me again and said, "Dean, you may have heard different reports on the tenuous nature of the debate. Those are my words, not his. But he said I fully intend we'll see you Thursday night." And so I can't say that he ever equivocated in one way or the other about that debate. He made a commitment. Maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, and he followed through with it and confirmed it earlier this week.
Dean, what can you tell us about Jim Maurer's chances of beating Steve King, the six-term incumbent?
I'm not a prognosticator, but you'd have to say that it's a long shot because, as I said during that debate last night in introducing the candidates, some of those counties in what's now the 4th Congressional District, of course, has been redistricted every 10 years since 1960s, but it's been some of those counties in that district have not had a Democratic congressman since the mid-1960s. And at least the most recent ones since the 1990s. And so it has gone Republican consistently at that entire block since the 1990s, some since the 1960s.
Mm-hmm. Last time around in 2012, it was the former First Lady of Iowa, Kristi Vilsack, who challenged Steve King. How would you compare the two campaigns, the one run by the Vilsack campaign and by Maurer?
I'd have to say that Jim Maurer is a more articulate, thoughtful, and depth on the issues than was Kristi Vilsack. Kristi Vilsack did not put in the debate performance that Jim Maurer has. Kristi Vilsack on the campaign trail was not as strong as Jim Maurer is. That being said, it's still an uphill battle. But you've got to understand, in the most recent redistricting, the Story County, the city of Ames, is now drawn into that district, and it is a little bit more diverse than it was.
Iowa Public Radio's Dean Borg, thank you for joining us, and get well. I know you battled. It was questionable whether you could even help moderate that debate last night with a virus. We hope you can certainly hear that, and thank you for being with us, and we hope you get well soon.
Thank you for putting up with the voice, Ben.
All right. Iowa Public Radio's Dean Borg. Congressman Steve King seeking his seventh term in Congress, while the 28-year-old challenger, Jim Maurer, and a Iraq War veteran from Boone, waging an intensive campaign in an effort to unseat him. Now let's talk with Kathy Obradovich, political columnist for the Des Moines Register. You were one of the moderators, along with Dean Borg, at
yes.
the debate. Hello, Kathy.
Hello.
Tell us, what were the highlights for you? How would you characterize the debate?
Well, this was definitely a very contentious debate. Jim Maurer has an uphill battle against Steve King. This is a heavily Republican district, the most heavily Republican in the state. And it was the only debate. So I think Jim Maurer felt like he really had to make his mark. He was very, very aggressive in attacking King at almost every turn. And Steve King responded as you might expect. He was kind of disgruntled by it. He did defend himself, but it was clear that he wasn't very happy.
Mm-hmm. We heard earlier with Dean the exchange about Ebola and the U.S. The use of U.S. military troops to combat the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. What other issues were addressed that come to mind for you as highlights?
Well, I think that the two candidates were on opposite poles on just about every turn. And, you know, that veteran comment that you played, I thought that was the one area where Jim Maurer probably went a little too far in his attacks. I think generally his debate performance fired up his base. They loved to see him going after Steve King. But, you know, it seems like a little bit going a little bit too far to attack an opponent simply for having not served in the military. I think he could have made that point another way. The two candidates were also on opposite ends of Obamacare. Of course, Steve King has worked really hard to repeal that. Jim Maurer says, you know, he wants to make some changes, but he ultimately would keep the law. They were on the opposite side of the fence on immigration, with Steve King saying secure the border and nothing else. With Maurer going for the Senate bipartisan comprehensive reform bill. So clearly a very big contrast with these candidates.
Dean Borg shared when I asked him about comparing this with 2012 that he thought Jim Maurer is running a much better campaign than the former First Lady Kristi Vilsack did 2 years ago. You agree?
Well, I think that he has been competitive in fundraising. In fact, as of September 30, he'd actually raised more money than Steve King. And he, I think, actually was a candidate who might be a little bit better fit for the district because of his service in the military, Iraq War veteran, also worked in the Pentagon, and has some national context, which also has made him a more competitive candidate. But Steve King doesn't seem that worried. He waited until the last couple of weeks to go up on TV with his ads. He is, you know, I think his agreement to debate even once suggests that he feels pretty confident in his campaign. So we'll have to see how it looks on Election Day.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we just have to look to statistics to tell us that incumbents have the upper hand here. Do we have any polls in the 4th District to tell us what voters are thinking?
You know, most of these congressional districts, there's very little public polling. The other polls that you see, you're never sure how well you can trust them. So I think the polling data is not very reliable at this point.
Okay. Let's turn to another development in the most closely watched race in the state, also one that is being watched nationally as it may decide control of the U.S. Senate. The race between Joni Ernst and Bruce Braley. Now, this week, the Iowa Republican U.S. Senate candidate, Joni Ernst, canceled a meeting with the Des Moines Register editorial board, also declined to meet with the editorial boards of several major Iowa newspapers, the Cedar Rapids Gazette, the Dubuque Telegraph. I wanted to ask you about this, Kathy, but first of all, because you do work for the Register, what is your relationship with the editorial board there?
Well, I work in the same building. I'm not a member of the editorial board, and I don't endorse candidates. So I sometimes sit in on the editorial board's interviews with candidates, but I'm not part of their deliberations. When I read the editorial endorsement in the paper, I'm reading it along with all the other readers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about this move by the Ernst campaign. How unusual is it not to meet with editorial boards and then not to meet with the editorial board of the most widely circulated paper in the state?
It's rare. It's not unheard of. There have been other candidates who haven't come in for an interview. Our publisher, Rick Green, said that it would not rule her out for being endorsed just because she wasn't interviewed. But I would say it's unusual. Most candidates, even if they don't expect the endorsement, will at least come in for the interview. And, of course, there are news stories that are generated from those interviews as well, and a lot of times video for our website.
Now, the Ernst campaign, spokeswoman Gretchen Hamel emailed the statement, and I'll just read it, the brief one. Recent editorials in the Des Moines Register make her position in this race perfectly clear, make their position in this race perfectly clear, and it's one that many voters across our state seem to disagree with less than 12 days to go. Time is precious. Joni wants to spend every minute talking to undecided voters, hearing their concerns, and demonstrating why we need a change in Washington. As a longtime political analyst, Kathy Obradovich, can you perhaps share some unspoken reasons why the Ernst campaign may be turning down papers' requests?
Well, I do think that they're making a pragmatic judgment that they don't think they're going to get the endorsement. And those types of editorial board interviews where one candidate is being questioned by maybe a half a dozen people is a risky type of environment for a candidate. They could easily make a gaffe in that environment that puts them and their standing in the race at risk in some way. So I think it was a calculated judgment about risk versus reward. Having said that, however, the Des Moines Register editorial board has had a history of, in fact, supporting positions of one candidate and then endorsing another. The most prominent one that comes to mind is in 2012, where they endorsed Mitt Romney over Barack Obama, even though the board had been behind Obamacare and behind a lot of the positions that Obama was taking in the campaign.
Mm-hmm. What issues do you think the editorial board, and you don't have a relationship with them, but as a reporter, what issues do you think Joni Ernst would need to share more about that you haven't heard her talk a lot about in this campaign?
Well, so, I mean, I think that she has talked about a lot of issues. There are two issues in particular where I think she could be a little bit more forthcoming about her actual positions as opposed to her approach to the issues. One is Social Security, where she says everything is on the table except raising retirement age, including privatization of Social Security for younger workers. But she won't endorse any one of those things. And I think that is frustrating perhaps to some voters who want to know, you know, what is she going to vote for?
Mm-hmm.
Another one is tax policy. She has said she would like to see a flatter, fairer tax. She has not endorsed any particular plan. And actually, she's not alone in that. Bruce Braley, the Democratic candidate, has also said, you know, he wants to see tax reform and closing loopholes. But he's only mentioned one or two that he actually would fight to close.
Okay, and very briefly, before we have to say goodbye, Kathy, this week's Quinnipiac poll found Braley down 2 points to Ernst after being down 6 points the month before. This is consistent with other polls within the margin of error, but still showing Ernst ahead. This refusal to go talk with boards of major newspapers in Iowa, likely to get any traction with voters, make a difference?
I don't know. I think that voters who are watching that closely have probably already made up their minds. But, you know, in that kind of environment, an endorsement can actually, such a close race and a few undecided, very few undecided voters turning in late, an endorsement could actually make a difference in the race. So, I would have thought that Joni Ernst would be actively looking for and trying to get those endorsements.
Mm-hmm. Why do newspapers make endorsements anyway when other news organizations don't?
Well, it's an old tradition and one that some newspapers have abandoned. The Register maintains a strong editorial voice in Iowa. It is separate from the news coverage of politics and issues. And, you know, as a, they feel like as an informed voice on the issues, that they have a responsibility to readers to let them know how candidates stack up in the context of the positions that the paper has taken over time.
Okay. Kathy Obradovich, political columnist for the Des Moines Register. Thank you again, Kathy.
Thank you.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And now a quick whodunit before the break. We know thieves love to steal cars, electronics, bikes, but what about stealing an entire crop right out of the field? That's apparently what happened a few days ago. Matt Schuster farms near Lamont in northeast Iowa. Hello, Matt.
How are you guys doing today? Thanks for having me on the program.
Well, I'm sorry to hear your story. Tell us what happened.
Well, I run a farm in East Dubuque, Illinois. That's in Joe Davies County. That's right across the Dubuque-Wisconsin Bridge. And Sunday morning, I decided to go over and check on the crop and open some gates so we could maybe harvest that field. When I got over the hill and got to the field, my heart sank because I noticed that half the field was combined already for me.
What did you do then?
I contacted the East Dubuque Police Department, and they came up and investigated, and then I told me that I had to talk to Joe Davies County because that is in the county. So then I contacted them, and they sent an officer up, and I told them that this farm was harvested without my permission.
Mm-hmm. So how many acres are we talking of beans?
We're talking 18 acres of beans, and we figured approximately 1,600 bushel, and I had them contracted down at Gavilon Grain in Dubuque for $12.64.
Mm-hmm. So what's the loss there?
We're thinking right around $18,000 is the loss.
I'm very sorry for that. What do the authorities say? Is this something they've run into before?
Never. This is the first time that anybody, in the nation, the way it sounds now, this has never happened before.
That someone stole a crop right out of the field.
Correct.
What leads do you have? Did anybody see anything happen? It takes a few hours to combine this many beans, right?
Yes, it does. We figured it took them about 2.5 hours. We have 6 real good, credible witnesses that seen the combine and seen the machinery that was in there. Also, a perfect description of the man that was operating the combine.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to give the description of the combine and the person?
Sure. It was a smaller John Deere combine with a 13-foot platform. And the man that was driving it was dark-haired, slender build, and just an average-looking farmer.
Mm-hmm.
I know that ain't much to go on, but with the other witnesses, I think they're going to narrow it down pretty good.
Okay. This person could go off and sell those beans anywhere, and there would be no questions asked about where they came from?
Yes, but this is the kicker. These beans that they took off weren't 100% ripe yet, so they would have had a little green in them, and along the tree line, these beans were a little green yet. So they went down there and they took those off. So we're thinking maybe now that they're either going to sell them, blend them in, or they're going to try to feed them.
Feed them to cattle.
Feed them to cattle.
Mm-hmm. What about your loss here? Does crop insurance cover this sort of thing?
Well, I got some bad news. I have no coverage and there's no insurance because the clause that's in my blanket coverage on my other farm states that they don't cover standing crop. If the beans were in a bin and they loaded them out and then stole them, I was covered. But I'm working with Ronnie over Broccoli Insurance, and Ronnie is my from Dubuque, Iowa, and Dyersville, Iowa. Ronnie is saying I'm covered. He said he is 100% positive that he has me covered on a different policy. And right now, Ronnie is checking that situation out so he can get me some type of coverage on this loss.
We sure hope that works out for you and your family. What kind of thoughts are you having about the person, man or woman, who did this? I guess man was the description, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking that he must be a little bit on the desperate side. He must be having some financial problems. And this is kind of maybe a quick fix, you know, because nobody pays attention when there's, you know, 200 combines out this time of year combine, and every field was full of combines, and he just, you know, might have figured that he could sneak in and sneak out, which he pulled it off. And I'm really surprised that none of the neighbors contacted me, but it is what it is, but it's flat-out stealing.
It has never happened before, and
never.
We hope you get some money back or find out how this happened and who did it. Sorry to hear this story, but thank you for sharing it with us. Matt Schuster, who farms in northeast Iowa, we wish you all the best and hope you don't take that great a loss.
Well, thanks for having me, and I will surely give you an update in the future and let you know how it turns out.
Okay. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Still to come on this edition of River to River, we hear about our new statewide emergency notification system. Also, Iowa nice guy Scott Sipker announces he's running for governor as a member of the newly created Nice Party. We'll be back in just a moment. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Catching up on some news that we didn't get to otherwise during the week through some quick conversations. On Tuesday, the state launched a new statewide emergency alert system. It allows officials to get in touch with Iowans about severe weather, other emergencies, via text message, social media, also cell phone calls. John Benson joins me now, Public Information Officer for the Iowa Department of Homeland Security. Hi, John.
Good afternoon, Ben. How are you doing today?
Fine. Good afternoon to you. So let's compare the new with the old system. What do we have now in the new system that we didn't have before?
Well, the one thing we've looked at is we're looking at trying to reach as many people as possible on all of these technologies that are emerging. You know, you're probably familiar with the old EBS or EAS systems and NOAA weather radios and things like that. And we wanted to make sure we include those into the new things that we have, but we also want to be able to reach out and grab and notify people via their cell phones, shoot them text messages, you know, even possibly include videos or pictures if we need to do something like that. Talk about reaching out to their email systems and even, you know, social media aspects. So we're trying to leverage all of those new communication tools that are out there just as another way of maybe hitting people that don't hit those traditional systems, that aren't watching an EAS message or something like that. Just to, we want to make sure we get as many of those new possible technologies to use that we can.
So if I want a text message when there is severe weather, do I need to get in touch with someone specifically to get on a list for a text message sign up?
Yep, that is correct. What you will see is as the system is being deployed across the state, for each of the individual counties that come onto the Alert Iowa system, what you will see is they will have a web presence unique to their own particular county, and then you can go onto that web page. And what you'll be able to do is you can sign up for your cell phone number, email addresses, you know, what other methods of communication that you might have. And then you can even go so far to pick to say which type of alerts you want to say receive. So let's say you're interested in receiving amber alerts that come to your area, but you're not necessarily interested in receiving notices regarding severe thunderstorms. So it allows you to kind of customize how you as an individual citizen will interface with that. And so as we go through the next coming months, we'll be working to make sure the public knows that it's coming into their area. From both our state level and both from the local level as well, because we want to make sure that people leverage this system because it ultimately benefits them.
Where are these new services available now?
We've got about 30 counties across the state that have said, hey, we're interested in getting into that. So we're working with them to deploy. We do already have some counties that are going to be out there that are on that system, like Linn County, Johnson County, Washington County. There's a couple others out there throughout the state that are using this system. So as those additional counties come on and they come live, we'll be doing some press work with that to let people know both statewide and locally that now that system is available in their county. But we've got 30 right now. We anticipate as we go through the year, 50, 60, 70 that will come on and join because, quite honestly, the price is right for them. We make it available to local authorities to use at no cost.
What sort of investment was needed for this upgrade?
Well, it really wasn't an upgrade per se. It's actually leveraging technology that's out there with particular vendors. There's multiple vendors that do this type of work. And so we went through an RFP process to have a conversation with those vendors about technologies and also about costs. And essentially, for the counties that are going to be coming on and using this, really doesn't require any hardware installations at their end. It's really an internet-based type of engine that does this. So it's just leveraging those modern technologies that are out there, grabbing some of the old notification methods, some of the new ones, and putting them all into a nice, clean package where you can do it all in one sitting.
Mm-hmm. In our news, you mentioned some of the traditional causes for alarm that we want to be aware of, severe weather, tornadoes, and so forth. But also we have in our news, of course, Ebola. We have terrorism. Are those on your list, too, that people could be notified of in case of emergencies, a biohazard or terrorism?
Oh, certainly. They certainly are. And we kind of we don't want to get too prescriptive in how we define what an emergency is, particularly across the entire state, because we want to make sure those local authorities are the ones that define what that emergency looks like, because that's really where your emergencies tend to start, as you guys know. And so we want to make sure they have the capability of defining what that emergency is. Now, we also at the state level would have capability to do statewide messaging, emergency messaging, if we needed to. But the more likely scenario is that you would have, you know, let's say you have a localized act of terrorism and it's in a defined area. Well, they can do messaging inside of that defined area with this system and give specific instructions to the public on what actions they need them to take. So it's that we want to make sure that they use the tool for those instant type of messages where they need the public to do something to protect themselves.
John Benson, is a place for our listeners to go to check if their own county is online yet?
I would recommend starting first with our state website, homelandsecurity.iowa.gov, and look for the Alert Iowa logo on the front page. And what that will do is it will take you to the Alert Iowa page. It'll have a quick listing of all of those counties that are either deploying or are deployed. And then you'll, if your county has deployed, you'll be able to click on that county. It'll take you right to that county's web presence. So if they want to register to receive alerts from that particular county, it'll get them right there and get the process started for them.
Okay, John, it sounds like a new service that a lot of people will be taking advantage of, the state launching a new statewide emergency alert system. John Benson, Public Information Officer for the Iowa Department of Homeland Security. Thanks for your time, John.
Thanks, Ben. I appreciate it.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Less than 2 weeks to go before Election Day, candidates for Congress and their surrogates touring the state, encouraging Iowans to vote. Iowa nice guy Scott Sipker has his own message. Let's listen.
I'm the Iowa nice guy, and I have a message for Iowans. Cue the flag. Our state, along with all others, has a misunderstanding of the importance of non-presidential elections. Turns out said elections are vastly more important to your everyday life than electing a president. The number of important races going on in Iowa at this moment is hard to count when you don't even know there are races going on. NASCAR's had this problem for years. Well, the time for Iowans to not pay attention to these elections is over, because I'm about to make state and local politics interesting again. Let's do this.
That's the first part of Scott Sipker's newest video announcing. We'll let him announce it on the phone. I have Scott Sipker, Iowa's nice guy, with us. What are you announcing?
Well, we're announcing that the Iowa nice guy is running for governor. So there you go.
All right.
Changing the world one election at a time.
Right. Well, you're in, I guess, before Election Day, but not much before Election Day.
Yeah, not much. You know, we feel like this is probably plenty of time, especially since we're the ones that have to come up with all the content and make the videos. You know, we had thrown around this idea for a long time, and we originally were going to come out maybe a month ahead of time. And as we just looked at the schedule and we saw there were other, actual legitimate governor debates and stuff going on, we kind of wanted to wait a little bit longer.
Right.
That way we didn't have to fill as much time with content.
And with less than 2 weeks to go before the election, you can use all of your campaign war chest on very few days.
Yes, and if you listen to the rest of the video, we have promised to split all of our campaign funds with Mr. Hatch and Mr. Branstad as long as they agree to do the same.
And they've probably responded right away, right?
Oh, yes, I've heard absolutely nothing from them, but I'm still crossing my fingers. Now, granted, we've received exactly zero campaign funds, so maybe it's not worth it for them. But, maybe they won't worry about the math.
Well, you are representing, you are running for governor as part of the Nice Party. You call yourself Nicers. Tell us why we should vote for you, Scott.
Nicers are people who hopefully of all current parties can exist with under the umbrella of the Nicer part of the Nice Party. And Nicers, the big thing is, right now at least, is we want people to hold their own candidates responsible for all these attack ads that are just inundating us and culturally destructive, I think. It's just way, way over the top. You probably can't play this on the air, but we also found an attack ad against the Iowa Nice Guy released by some people that call themselves Neckbeards for our Nebraska. And, if you want to check that out, they also did an attack ad, and I think that commentary, the satire of it that is there, hopefully tells you everything you need to know about what we think about attack ads.
Okay, let's listen to a little bit of that attack ad on, of all parties, the Nice Party.
The Iowa Nice Guy is running for governor, but he's not so nice. The Iowa Nice Guy has been caught on camera swearing.
I reprimand our elected officials in D.C. for being a bunch of
and not just on internet videos, on national television.
Are you kidding me?
And influence kids to dress like him and do the same.
Well, if that isn't the greatest costume I've ever seen.
Nebraska.
He has also stood very close to an exposed penis and seemed not to care. The Iowa Nice Guy, Not so nice. Neckbeards of Nebraska is responsible for the content of this ad.
Okay, Scott, could it have something to do that the Nice Party, as the future governor representing the Nice Party of Iowa, you wanted to annex Omaha, and the reason you gave for that was what? Come on.
Omaha is a really exciting city, and it should not be in a state that boring.
Oh.
So we just thought, you know, this seems like something would be a win-win. Omaha is a great town. Iowa could use Omaha. Omaha could use Iowa. So the Iowa Nice Guy is protecting Omaha from Nebraska. And I think that just makes sense. When's the last time somebody came out with such a bold idea to increase the territory of their state? I mean, now that's a bold idea.
How about President Putin of Russia?
Okay, well, you did. Okay, checkmate. The Iowa Nice Guy does not endorse what Vladimir Putin is doing in the Crimea. And Omaha, the annexation of Omaha will require no violence whatsoever.
You also claim, as governor, you would do something that even Abe Lincoln was not able to do. Would you share that?
Well, I've already done it. It's grow a full beard. I mean, Abe Lincoln never did that. So as far as I can tell from the still photos and the paintings I've seen.
So you mean mean that little bit above his lip was not hairy, and that's why you say it's not a full beard?
Exactly. Now, technically, you could probably argue maybe split hairs with the definition of a full beard. But, you know, this is politics. Who cares about the details?
Scott Sipker, we're having a lot of fun here, but you've got an important message here, I believe. What is underlying this? What's the motivation here? What do you really want to have happen?
It is to get awareness out about the fact that there is an election going on, and an important election, as all elections are. And you played a little bit of it. The non-presidential elections don't have as much pizzazz or razzle-dazzle to them. So people don't get as excited or turn out the vote as much as they should. And these local and state elections, they're so important to your everyday life. Hopefully people, through the satire that we're doing, will bring people some more awareness and say, oh, yeah, right, I need to vote. Obviously, I need to do this part of my duty of being an American citizen. So, you know, that's kind of the message we want to get out there. Also, that these attack ads, seriously, have gone way too far. And somebody needs to call them out on it. Hopefully people get out to the polls. They can go now. You can still register through the 25th and get out and vote. Just freaking vote, people.
Well, because you have this new campaign, you're obviously not going to be in time to be on the ballot. But I imagine I'm looking at over 10,000 views so far on your YouTube video announcing your run for the governor, you will get a few write-ins. How do you feel about that?
I hope, I really hope that we, when we're encouraging people to get out to vote, that we're also encouraging them to do their research and vote for candidates that are legit and will actually represent them the way they want to be represented. So I, as humbled as I am that people actually are saying they are going to write in the Iowa Nice Guy for governor, I hope that they do take it seriously, their civic duty to get out and vote and get people in office that they want to be representing them.
Okay, well, who knows? I hope you've got a tape measurer there. You may be needing to measure for drapes.
You know what, Ben? If I win, you can be my chief of staff, all right?
Oh, you heard it here. We have it documented. All right. I'm on board, Scott.
All right, sweet. And if you don't want that job, Director of Communications looks like you'd just be great at.
Iowa Nice Guy.
That's how you do it right there, everybody. If you want to be a politician, you really want a brown nose with the media.
Iowa too nice of a guy, Scott Sipker, perhaps, representing the Nice Party. Scott Sipker, great to have you on again.
Thank you, Ben, so much. And everybody, get out the vote.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Across the world, Hindus, Jains, and Sikhs are celebrating the Hindu New Year during Diwali, otherwise known as the Festival of Lights. It celebrates the triumph of light over darkness, knowledge over ignorance, good over evil, hope over despair. Here in Iowa, an estimated 15,000 people will be celebrating Diwali. Shravan Mandamula is with us, president of the Indo-American Association of Iowa. Hello, Shravan.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Explain a little bit more about what Diwali is.
As you just explained, Diwali is about a festival of lights, celebrating the good over the evil. Where it came from Hindu mythology, so it's basically celebrated multiple days. And the day before Diwali is there is a Hindu mythology about a demon being killed by Lord Krishna and Goddess Kali. So as they kill that demon, the next day is the celebrations, is the Diwali festival of lights. So a lot of people in Iowa, across the world, across U.S. and in India, celebrate by decorating with lights, having festivities, several family and friends gathering, and then distribute sweets. So as you said, it's a light over darkness, hope over despair.
Tell us a little bit more about the basis of this. You said the story of a demon being killed. What is the legend behind the celebration, that story?
Legend is like, so again, the demon that's called Narakasura, and then Lord Krishna, I'm sure a lot of people, it's basically two different, just like Bible, like Hinduism follows this Bhagavad Gita and Ramayana, and according to that Bhagavad Gita is what Lord Krishna basically, along with Goddess Kali, because this demon got all the powers and only women can kill him. So Goddess Kali accompanies Lord Krishna to kill Narakasura.
So how will it be celebrated here in Iowa? I know there's a Hindu temple in Iowa. This is where?
Yeah, so a Hindu temple in Madrid for last 7-8 years. I think it started in 2005. And every year we celebrate with a special worship around 5 in the evening to a goddess Lakshmi, which is of wealth, and then followed by professional fireworks at dusk. This is similar to July 4th celebrations we have here in the U.S. Professional fireworks will come. A lot of people, about 1,000 to 1,500 people will gather at the temple. It's a pretty big aside of Des Moines River in Madrid. So about 1,500 people will gather, and then there will be some fireworks, professional fireworks, as well as families doing some handy crackers.
Is this only an event for Hindus, or are all welcome?
So across India, it's everyone, all religions join. And even here in the temple, we communicate to everyone to join. It's not specific to Hindus only, but the practice-wise, Hindus do the practice and plan, and we invite everyone to join.
So Dallas Center is a celebration happening November 2nd. Can you tell me about that one?
Yeah. So this is specific to Indian Association. So Hindu temple follows the Hindu rituals and stuff, and then similarly, like Indian Association of Iowa, it's been in existence for the last 40 years. So as people migrated to U.S., as the Indian population grew in Iowa, this association grew in size as well. So this association mainly concentrates on keeping the culture, maintaining the culture, having these kind of events so that community can get together, and then kids learn about our culture, and they dress up in Indian clothes. They perform some dances to Indian rhythms. So it will be an indoor auditorium event. We do it every year, and this year it's on November 2nd, indoor event with about 500 people coming, about 100 people participating. It's mostly kids up from 5 to 12-year ages. So there is no restriction, but that's the kind of age group we target to make sure they learn about culture and keep in touch.
Of course, for Happy New Year, the new year that we mostly pay attention to, January 1st, we greet people with Happy New Year. Is there a greeting that we could surprise our Indian friends here in Iowa with? What would you say to another person greeting them for the Hindu New Year?
Hindu New Year, again, like we would just say like a happy and prosperous New Year.
Okay.
Hardik Shubhakamanaye. That's the Hindi word that we use.
What is
Hardik Shubhakamanaye?
What does that mean?
It's basically, it's kind of a Hardik Shubhakamana. Shubhakamanaye is good wishes. Hardik is from my heart.
Good wishes from my heart. Heartfelt wishes.
Heartfelt wishes. You said that right.
Shravan Mandamula, president of the Indo-American Association of Iowa, thank you very much.
Thank you again for NPR. Thanks for hosting. Thanks for having me on your show.
And Shravan, heartfelt wishes for a new year.
Thank you, and you too. Have a happy holidays. Thank you.
And that's it for today. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. If you want to hear a podcast of this program or any of our other prior talk shows, go to iowapublicradio.org. You'll find podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River and Talk of Iowa. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. You can contact us anytime. Here's our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.